Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather round the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved. And its host and founder and guiding light is Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. She'll be talking with actress Judith Light this half hour, but first let's jump right into a conversation that Carol conducted recently with Ginger Alden. She's an actress and a model known for her role on the daytime soap opera Capital. She's going to talk to Carol about her new book titled Elvis and Ginger. Elvis Presley's fiancée and last love finally tells her story, published by Berkeley.
Now, what made you decide 37 years after Elvis's death, he was only 42, you were 20, to write a memoir about him, and why hadn't you done it before?
Well, I had no plans in the beginning. I had, shortly after Elvis passed away, I wrote down so many of my memories just for own personal reasons. I just didn't want to forget things and to hold on to him. That was my way of holding on to him. And I went forward with my life. I worked. I ended up having my son. I got married. I had a son. And I knew it was going to take so much emotion and time because there were so many untruths out there being thrown out about our relationship in his last 9 months. But I decided to devote my time to my son. And I raised him. He turned 20 this year. He started college 2 years ago. And I sat down and put all my memories back on paper because it was just necessary to do.
Now, as you said, you had taken some notes early on when you were with Elvis, but wasn't it hard to remember a lot of the things that happened so many years ago? And was it painful to dredge up the memories of, you know, of his unexpected, shocking death? And also at the same time, wasn't it also pleasant to remember some of the joyous times you two had had?
Well, yes. I mean, there were many emotional times. I had many beautiful memories. Being as young as I was, things left a huge impact on me. I remembered exact sentences that were said, you know, and that's what I wrote down shortly afterwards. And as time went on, I was able to speak with my family and get some more of the stories and their, little incidents that they remembered and jogging my memory. So that helped to complete, put it all together. But it was a very emotional journey and took me a good 2 years.
I bet. Now, before we look at the many sides of Elvis's personality, how did you first meet him? Weren't you only five? And when did your paths meet again at Graceland in November of 1976? Because I guess nothing happens by chance.
Well, my father was in recruiting and public relations in the Army, and he was actually at the Kennedy Veterans Hospital the day Elvis was inducted into the Army. And they first met there, and there were some pictures taken of them. And when Elvis was out of the Army in 1960, my father stopped by Graceland a few times for some public relations tidbits, and he became friendly with one of Elvis's uncles. And Elvis was known for inviting people to the fairgrounds and to the movies. And one evening, Elvis's uncle said, "Elvis is going. Would you like to go to the movies?" So my mom and dad went to the movies one night, and then on another occasion, they were invited to the fairgrounds, and I actually went along that night with my siblings, and when I met Elvis, he patted me and my sister Terry on our head. So that was my first meeting when I was five. And then quite a few years later, November 1976, my sister Terry was Miss Tennessee at the time, and a close friend of Elvis's called our home and said Elvis was dating around, would like to meet the new Miss Tennessee. And we were just flabbergasted. And my sister had a boyfriend at the time, and I was even seeing someone. But my older sister, Rosemary, said, you know, can Ginger and I go with you to my sister, Terry? And we just thought we would innocently, for the first time, get to peek inside Graceland, which was like going to the White House for us growing up in Memphis, and just peek inside Graceland, shake Elvis's hand, meet him, and come back and tell our friends. And that evening turned out quite different for me.
Well, it certainly did. And, you know, one of the things that I learned that was so interesting about Elvis was that he was really obsessed with learning about Eastern religions and conspiracy theories and numerology, and he always had books by his bedside on the table that had to do with these subjects. So do you know why he was so fascinated by them?
You know, I think it was when I met Elvis, he was at such a stage in his life and more mellow and on the spiritual search, I felt, trying to understand why he had become who he was. And I think he found solace in reading through these and was just absolutely fascinated. But Elvis, it was hard for him to understand, why he had become who he was, and he was just on a serious, serious spiritual quest.
Now, you said that one of the main reasons for writing your memoir was clear up some misconceptions that the tabloids printed and about Elvis, particularly in the last year in his life. And one of them was that he was depressed and that he was too heavy, but you say that he was just bloated and it had something to do with his diet.
Yes, I always get defensive with this, and I wrote trying to put it as best I could so the reader would understand. One of the things I first noticed with Elvis was he used extreme amount of salt when salting his food, and Elvis thought he knew what was best for him. He didn't see the cycle he was in, and he had to take water pills many times, he said, before a show. He even held up his hand one time and showed me how puffy it was that he couldn't bend it. And I remember telling him, well, salt makes you retain fluid. And this was in the beginning. I couldn't say, you can't use this right off the bat. But over time, as time went on, if I saw him re-salt something, which he did quite often, I would say something to him, and he would set the salt shaker down. But it was something that he couldn't see at the time. But it would make him bloated. And I could see him in a performance. He could look a little puffy, more puffy in his face. And then after the show, he'd look like he dropped 10 pounds from perspiration.
Wow. And as you discussed in your book, one of the things that people don't know about Elvis was he did have a temper, and that often involved firing a gun. And you had an experience when he fired a pistol at the wall over your headboard, and it was all about yogurt. So what was that about?
Well, Carol, I wanted to say that I blamed the infrequent, and they were infrequent, events that I felt I had to write about so people could understand what I went through a few times. Elvis had a strong dependency on sleep medication, and that was what I witnessed, and I do believe it caused the mood swings that he had. That wasn't who Elvis was 98% of the time, but I did write about an incident where the two of us were asleep. He woke up early. He wanted, I think this was the papaya juice incident, is this, or was it the yogurt?
Yogurt.
The yogurt. And I didn't hear him. I fell back asleep. I told him didn't think he needed any more because he had quite a few containers of it that particular. And, yes, he fired a gun off the headboard. And, I wrote about that particular event and me trying to understand him and what was going through his mind at that time. And he did apologize. When these events happened, he apologized. But I came to understand that these were, mood swings from too much
of the medications that he was getting for his sleeping problems. And they were really responsible for his life disintegrating. And do you think, thinking about it, that his doctor and his staff didn't draw a line in the sand when it came to repeatedly giving him these drugs every day, because they were afraid of losing their job and perhaps their power?
Well, there were many things. I still have questions. There were many things I didn't understand at the time, and I do feel that doctors, my experience with doctors, you trusted doctors, you looked up to doctors, and Elvis had quite a few doctors, and I thought these have to be the best. This is Elvis they're taking care of. And there were times I saw one of his doctors, Dr. Nicopolis. They would have give and take. Elvis would wake more often right before a tour, which I understood. He was more anxious right before a tour started, and he would request more sleep medication. And there would be what I called give and take. Sometimes he would get more, sometimes not. But I never understood that at the time I met Elvis, why there hadn't been a line drawn in the sand more, or someone really trying to diminish that. I mean, how long does it take to cut back, and I was a newcomer there, and so I still have many questions.
And also, Elvis was very romantic and generous and caring, and there's so many examples in your book how he helped family members and he helped people, and he didn't want to take any credit for it, and he put so much energy and caring into picking out the right gifts for his loved ones. And so can you tell our listeners about the most beautiful engagement ring that he gave you and the beautiful story behind the center diamond in it?
Yes, thank you. I remembered sitting in his daughter Lisa's room with him one evening. It was on January 26, 1977, and he left the room, went into his room for a little bit, and he was gone for a while, so I got up to see where he was, saw him talking on the phone. I went back into Lisa's room, And I noticed that evening more commotion. He seemed like he was avoiding me, which was unusual. And there was commotion, more people coming up and down the stairs. And after a little while, he came into the room, back into Lisa's room, took me by the hand, and walked me through the dressing area of his bathroom. And his bathroom was like a sanctuary to him. It was a large bathroom. And he had me sit in a chair in front of a window. And the next thing I know, Elvis got on bended knee and said many, many beautiful things to me, and then presented me with a green velvet box, opened it, and inside was this most magnificent diamond ring I'd ever seen. And it was a beautiful, beautiful moment, never forgotten. And I found out later that Elvis had a custom ring that he always wore on stage, and that the diamond from that ring was taken out of his ring and placed in my engagement ring.
So that was such a special thing for him to do. Oh. Now, what happened to the ring?
I have it. I have my ring.
And is that really the only item that you have from those days?
Oh, no, I have many beautiful things. Elvis gave me. I have a beautiful TLC necklace, books, many beautiful pieces of jewelry, many beautiful cards and notes he wrote.
And I think we should mention that the TCB, because I think it shows a lot about his character and that he cared about his band, really stood, and he had that on every personal item that he had, stood for taking care of business, and that really was his band.
Right. And the lightning bolt meant lightning fast.
Right, right. Now, fast forwarding to that awful night in August of 1977, you walked into Elvis's bathroom. You saw him lying on the floor. Could you believe at first that he was dead? I mean, what must have been such a shock?
Absolutely not. I remembered, I was in such shock. I remember trying to be calm. I remember thinking, don't alarm anyone. Don't sound when I call downstairs for one of the maids answered the phone, and I said, who's on duty? And I remembered just trying to stay calm, and it was just your brain not recognizing what you're seeing. It's just being in denial, complete denial. And it was such a devastating, devastating day for all of us.
And now, Ginger, that you've finally written a memoir about your relationship with Elvis, did you find it was a therapeutic experience? And also, do you feel that you have been able to set some things right? There were all those tabloid speculations about his last year.
I've had many of his fans saying, my God, thank you. And it's given me the most, touched me so deeply that, you know, they're going, I understand now. Because there were these exaggerations that he was sitting upstairs eating these fried peanut butter and banana sandwiches and depressed in his room. And I thought, that's not who I saw. I never once saw him eat one of those sandwiches. So that was exaggerated. But, you know, Elvis, being upstairs for him was his sanctuary. We laughed. We watched television. He played an organ in his office for me quite often. And Elvis was not someone that was sitting up and just in a dark mood all the time. And, you know, we did go out on his three-wheelers, and we did go out on motorcycles. And that was an image that bothered me tremendously. But as I said, I didn't want to miss time with my son. I could have done a book earlier, but I waited because I realized all the emotion, all this time to get this right would take. And I didn't want to take away from my son at the time.
Ginger Alden, in conversation with Carol Marx. Her book is titled Elvis and Ginger, Elvis Presley's Fiancé and Last Love Finally Tells Her Story, published by Berkeley. I'm Michael Harrison. Carol Marx returns in conversation with actress Judith Light next when A Touch of Grey continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is our host, Carol Marx, in conversation with actress Judith Light. She's an Emmy and Tony Award-winning actress known for TV's Dallas, Who's the Boss, and for a groundbreaking role as Karen Wallach in ABC's long-running soap opera, One Life to Live. She's going to talk to Carol now about the importance of getting a flu shot.
And Judith Light, it's wonderful to have you on A Touch of Grey.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's lovely to talk to you today.
Now, you look way, way too young to have just turned 65. You've got a great little video about that. And is that one of the reasons you wanted to get involved with the National Council on Aging's Flu and You campaign?
Well, I wanted to get involved with Flu and You, and I wanted to get involved with Santa Fe Pasteur, and I wanted to get involved with the National Council on Aging because I thought what was really important about any health issue is, and any issue in life for that matter, is that if one is educated about something, then you can do something about it. And particularly for people who are 65 and older, I wasn't aware of this, but there was a higher dose vaccine. And so when I went on the National Council of Aging, when I went on their website, which is ncoa.org/flu, I got a lot of information. I found out that the immune system is not as strong as it was when we were younger. It doesn't fight back on diseases as easily as it once did. If you have chronic conditions like COPD or heart disease or diabetes, if you get the flu and you're 65 or older, those conditions can worsen. And so I thought this is really important to tell people about. And a lot of people just say, oh, I don't have time to get my flu shot. I am too busy and, you know, I don't think about it. And everybody talks about it every year and everybody says, oh, I should do this. I really should go do this. And people tend to write it off and they get too busy and then they get the flu. And it is very severe, it is contagious, and for people who are over 65, it can be life-threatening. And that's why I felt it was very important to talk about.
And I think it is so important along with you. And do you think that if you're over 65, you really don't need to wait or should wait for the flu season, which begins in October and ends in February, to begin getting that annual flu shot and talking to your physician about it?
Well, you always want to talk to your healthcare provider. You want to have the conversation. That's part of being proactive. And what happens is that if you get the shot now, that's why we're talking about it now. If you get it early, before flu season actually begins in October, you have those 2 or 3 weeks to have the antibodies working in your body so that you have the most protection. Whenever you have something that is preventable, it's always much better than getting the disease and having to deal with it. As everybody knows, you don't want to be out of work. You don't want to be out of work for a couple of days. You don't want to be out of work for a couple of weeks, which is possible and what can happen. I don't know if you've ever had the flu, but I've had it, and I feel like I want to die. And I don't want to go there, and that's why I thought it was really important to talk to people. Nobody has to go through this. People can really do something about it, and soon.
And for, you know, people that have chronic diseases like heart disease and diabetes, something that I had never thought about, the National Council on Aging, and you were bringing up, and that's the fact that since a flu can easily pass from person to person, caregivers should really get the flu vaccine.
There isn't a person out there who shouldn't get the flu vaccine, whether it is the standard dose or the higher dose. And when you have a conversation with your healthcare professional, you can decide what is the best dose for you. But it's really about your own personal proactivity. You want to take care of yourself. You want to take care of your family. You want to take care of your community. And the other thing that is a statistic that was stunning to me is that adults that are 65 and older account for more than half, that's 60% of flu-related hospitalizations, and almost all, that's 90% of flu-related deaths, happen in people who are 65 and older. People are living longer. Their lives are different. Their health care is different. Their health is different. You know, 65 is not what it was when I was growing up. It's a very different time. But it's still extremely important to be paying attention to this. And those statistics are things that you can find on the National Council on Aging's website, which again is ncoa.org/flu. Very important to research this and do something about it.
And what I wanted to ask you is about places that people can get their flu shot. There are a lot of options available today, aren't there?
Yes, there are many, many options. I mean, everybody, if you walk out on the street or if you drive into your favorite mall, you'll see that there's a pharmacy. There's a place to get your flu shot. Everybody knows it. You see the posters in the window, and a lot of people, unfortunately, what they do is they ignore that. And the accessibility of being able to get the flu shot is so great. And you want to be able to talk to your doctor, your healthcare provider, Your pharmacist, they're also able to give you the flu shot. So, yes, it is very easy. It just takes somebody saying, you know what, we're doing it, and we're doing it today, and we're going to go out, and we're going to make sure that we take care of ourselves, our family, and everybody else in our community. Really important.
It is, and I think that it's a good thing people don't know, and they're over 65, to realize that Medicare will pay for the costs of getting that flu shot.
That is correct. And also another fact that people don't know, which I found out also, is that the CDC recommends an annual flu vaccination for everyone 6 months and older. And so that's why it's really good to have a conversation with your healthcare provider and say, which dosage should I be getting? What's the best thing for me? And as I said before, education is empowerment, and that's why I wanted to be a part of this.
And I congratulate you for doing something that's going to be so helpful for so many people, and you do lots and lots of wonderful charity work. And I also wanted to ask you, for your fans, because I'm one of them, and you have had so many outstanding roles, and so I want to ask for all of us, what projects have you just finished or are currently working on, because I always look for them.
Thank you so much. I just finished shooting 10 episodes of a new series for Amazon Prime, which is called Transparent, and it's going to be out on September the 26th, and it is I'm starring with these extraordinary people, Jeffrey Tambor being one of them, who is an old friend of mine, Jeffrey Tambor from Arrested Development, The Larry Sanders Show, among many other things, Amy Landecker, Jay Duplass, and Gabby Hoffman. And we are part of a family, and Jeffrey is transitioning from a man to a woman in this series. And it's groundbreaking, and it's incredibly exciting, and Amazon Prime is putting it on, as I said, September the 26th. I'm thrilled and honored to be a part of it.
That's very exciting, and are you back on Dallas?
Well, let's hope so. Let's hope that Dallas hope they get a fourth season pickup. And you know, I know that there's a lot happening in Dallas, and I know a lot of people want to know what's happening. So I know it was on last night, and so people are very excited about it. And it's a great group of people that I get to work with on that show too. So I'm very fortunate, and that's why I have to stay healthy.
That's actress Judith Light in conversation with Carol Marks. And if you're interested in getting more information, go to ncoa.org/flu. That's ncoa.org/flu. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do. And I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we come to that point in the program where we are joined by our senior correspondent, Kevin Casey, the vice president and executive editor of the trade magazine Talkers. Talkers covers the talk radio business from the inside, is read by people who are professional broadcasters, but you can visit Talkers at talkers.com because you're a professional listener. Now that we have that out of the way, Kevin, what's the big buzz in the biz this week?
Well, as usual, Michael, there are a number of topics being discussed that were discussed this week on talk on News Talk Radio. But one of the things they're talking about is what role does audio on demand, is that going to play in the industry, in the talk radio industry in the future? And for a lot of folks, they might use the term podcast to describe audio on demand. But it's a big buzz right now within the industry because it's turns out it's playing a larger and larger role, at least in the minds of audio consumers.
Well, that's certainly interesting. Audio on demand, like podcasting, it seems that it's really happening very much in television, and now radio is finding it's affecting it too, that in television, People want to watch TV shows when they want to watch them. They don't want to have to wait till Tuesday night at 10 o'clock.
And sometimes they only even want to watch segments of these mm-hmm. shows. For example, my daughter, and I know this is just one example, she likes to watch the music performances that occurred during the show Glee. She doesn't even watch the whole show Glee, but she goes on YouTube and she watches the performances.
Right.
An interesting example of how young kids are picking this stuff out.
So radio's doing that. For example, let's take this show that we're on now, A Touch of Grey. We have an interview with Judith Light that we just heard. Before that, we had an interview with a woman who was dating Elvis Presley. Somebody might just want to hear that. So what you do is you take that, you separate it from the show, and you make a podcast out of it, and the person could tune into it anytime they want on demand and then listen to it at their own leisure, not only when they want to, but what part of a bigger segment they want.
Mm-hmm.
So not only is it time shifting, it's also a matter of slicing and dicing.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that the podcast or programming on demand component of radio, now that radio stations have websites and there's the digital component, it's a great way of redistributing stuff that's on the on-air signal or on-air stream for people to listen to on their smartphones or, you know, their tablets.
Sure. And it's not that this technology is new. Obviously, it's been around for years and years. But now the producers and the consumers are starting to get better aligned with what each other want and how to get it to each other.
What I think we'll finally start seeing is that the only live programming on radio and television will be stuff that is time-sensitive, that has to be live. Like, the greatest example is watching a sporting event, watching a game. People want to see it live. Now, you might have it, you know, delay broadcast, delay video recording, and watch it later, but you have to hope nobody tells you the score. Don't tell me what happened at the game. I'm watching it.
Right.
But and even then, it's not quite as exciting as knowing it is happening now. So I think the 21st century, as it unfolds, is showing major new habits, a new paradigm, if you will, in how people consume media. And, you know, Talkers Magazine, of course, at talkers.com, is right on top of these things, as it must be, since its main readership are people who are professionals in the business and basically know what's going on. Kevin Casey, senior correspondent on our program and vice president, executive editor of Talkers. We are always happy to talk to you. Thanks for being here. And, ladies and gentlemen, much more coming your way when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're going to be joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Here's Steve Wiseman now in conversation with Dr. Jack Stern. He's on the clinical faculty at the Weill Cornell Medical College, and he's a board-certified neurosurgeon specializing in spine surgery. He's the co-founder of Spine Options, New York's first and only facility committed to non-surgical care of back and neck pain. And he's going to talk to Steve about his new book titled Ending Back Pain, Five Powerful Steps to Diagnose, Understand, and Treat Your Ailing Back, published by Avery.
Now, you're, interestingly enough, you are a board-certified surgeon, but surgery isn't what you think is probably the primary source for curing back pain. Is that right?
Well, that's right. The backstory, which it is the backstory for me writing the book Ending Back Pain, was the story of my own pain. And if I take a minute, I'll tell you that about 10 years ago, I hurt my back. And I'm the senior partner in a group of neurosurgeons. And they looked at two of the guys, looked at my MRI, and said, Jack, you need surgery. And I said to myself, I don't think so. And now 10 years later, I have avoided surgery, and I decided that perhaps I could help others by writing a book about the things that I know after almost four decades of being a neurosurgeon and share that with the readers.
It's absolutely terrific, and the book is very, very helpful. It's very, very readable, and it certainly applies to a lot of people. How common is back pain?
The statistics are remarkable. The most impressive statistic, perhaps, is, and it's been duplicated a number of times, that the average American has an 80 to 85% chance during their lifetimes of having back pain of such severity that they will miss work and need to seek medical advice, which means almost every American at some point in their lives is going to have back pain and need to see a doctor.
That's incredible. What are some of the more common causes?
Well, since the most common cause or pain generator anatomically is the muscles, the most common cause of back pain is someone who either misuses their spine or uses it foolishly. For example, what I call the weekend warrior, somebody who gets out there without exercising and decides that, gee, after a snowstorm, they can go ahead and shovel the 6 inches off the driveway, or decides after not doing any exercise that they're good for a game of touch football. And then those who misuse it, like I have, where I decided to lift something that's much heavier than I could possibly lift. And then there are also the large numbers of people who, because of their work, who do labor, just by the nature of what they do, really abuse their spines, because your spine really wasn't designed in many ways to do that kind of work.
Now, you have a five-step approach, which is, you know, wonderfully clear and concise. I wonder if you could kind of give us an overview of that.
Oh, sure. The premise is really that back pain is not a diagnosis. Back pain is a description. And as a physician, I can't treat a description. I can only treat a diagnosis. So the first step is How do I make a diagnosis? I try to identify those places in your spine that cause pain. So that's step number one, helping you, the reader, identify those areas in your spine that cause pain. Once you've done that, you need to, step two is you really need to advocate for yourself in the healthcare system. Because fortunately, back pain is usually self-limiting. Usually you take two pills and you get better in the morning, but many of us don't. So you really have to, number two is you have to learn how to advocate in the healthcare system. Number three, you really have to make sure that once a diagnosis is made, that it's the correct diagnosis, because without the correct diagnosis, you can't have the proper treatment. And step four is that once you've got the proper diagnosis and you're going to have treatment, not every treatment will work for every patient. We're all different. So you have to be willing to try a number of things before you might get some relief. And step five is you want a lifetime of a healthy spine. And ending back pain reviews for the reader some of the things that you might do or that I need to do in order to assure that I'm not going to have another bout of back pain, or worse, have chronic back pain so I wake up most mornings with pain in my back. So those, in summary, are the five steps.
Now, I found it interesting when I was reading it about a life that supports a strong, healthy back, that there were things that would be generally helpful to do in any event and didn't necessarily even apply in, to back care. So certainly the lifestyle that you would that you're advocating is something that's going to be not just good for your back but good for you all over, right?
Absolutely. And I point out that this isn't Jack Stern speaking. This is your physician speaking, and I'm just quoting what's going on in medicine right now, and that is we're a nation that is really bordering on obesity. It's a real problem, especially amongst our young people. Number two, it's a nation where we're too busy being human doers rather than human beers, so we don't pay attention to exercise or stretching. And those are some of the things that enhance your life in general. It's not just your back. Eating properly and exercising is something we as Americans need to do more often.
Yeah, and I mean, it really cannot be overemphasized. We've met the enemy, and he is us in many instances. One of the big things is communicating between physicians and patients. What do you think are some of the primary source of miscommunications between physicians and patients, particularly in regard to back pain?
Well, I think that it's true not only of back pain, actually, but of most communications between physicians and patients. And that is, number one, physicians now, because of what's going on in healthcare, don't devote much time to their patients. And frequently, you're interviewed by someone other than a physician. So, it's like playing telephone.
Yeah.
You know, if the physician's assistant, a nurse practitioner, who, by the way, are frequently great, take the history, then relate it to the doctor, and then the doctor relates it back to the patient or writes it in the medical record, you know, it is like playing telephones. Data, you know, the information gets lost along the way. So I strongly believe that in order to advocate for yourself, a patient takes on the responsibility of writing down their history before they go to the doctor. This is who I am. This is where it hurts. This is how long it hurts. This is what makes it better, and this is what makes it worse. And bring that document with you so that your healthcare provider has a better idea, and there's less miscommunication.
Sounds good. My wife won't let me go to the physician alone because she'll say, well, did you tell him this? Well, no, I didn't do that or that. And she comes as sort of my patient advocate, and I got to admit it, she does a pretty good job. Do you find other couples like this too?
I love it when the patient comes with someone else because, remember, although I'm a physician, I'm also a patient, and I know my anxiety level when I go see the doctor about a medical problem. And so that anxiety level doesn't allow me to hear clearly. It's just human nature. So I love it when, fortunately, I guess we both have wonderful wives, my wife joins me when we go to the doctor, and it's a more objective set of ears, and it's a wonderful thing.
Dr. Jack Stern in conversation with our senior correspondent Steve Wiseman, and the book is called Ending Back Pain, Five Powerful Steps to Diagnose, Understand, and Treat Your Ailing Back. It's published by Avery. Steve Wiseman returns, and he is going to give us an update on the Home Depot situation. That's next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marx offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marx is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast, and we continue our conversation with our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire. He's an attorney, he's an author, and he's one of the leading experts in America on fraud and scams. He's written the book, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall, and also Prentice Hall has just published his new book called Identity Theft Alert. His website is scamicide.com. Check it out. And now he's here to talk about a recent scam involving Home Depot. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, Home Depot has now confirmed what we knew all along, namely they've been hit by a massive data breach, actually one of about 56 million credit and debit cards, which is more than the 40 million of Target.
The hacking goes back all the way to April 1st, April Fool's Day, 2014, and it follows the same pattern we first saw in the hacking of Target last year, which was the first in what is already a long line of data breaches, including Neiman Marcus, P.F. Chang's, UPS. And as usual, due to the effectiveness of the malware used by what's probably the same Eastern European hackers, it wasn't even Home Depot that first discovered the data breach. Rather, banks monitoring credit card use that were able to find a common denominator of fraudulent use of credit cards and trace it back to Home Depot. The hackers who accomplished this are now selling the stolen credit and debit card information on black market websites in large batches. Interesting, along with the credit card numbers and debit card numbers, the hackers are also even selling the state and zip code for the particular cards. And this enables the hacker to defeat some fraud detection programs to pick up charges made from areas far from the home of the cardholders, like if you're living in New York and suddenly there's a charge in Italy. The identity thieves buying this card information can either buy the information for cards in their area or use them there or use them online. Now, Home Depot has announced it's providing a year's free credit monitoring through All Clear ID. This offer is being made to Home Depot customers who use their credit or debit cards at Home Depot between April 1st, 2014 and September 9th. If you want to enroll, you can either go to Home Depot's website, www.homedepot.com, or All Clear's special website, which frankly is too long, it's going to mix you up if I give it to you. But here's the other thing. You're going to get an email, possibly, and it might be from Home Depot, showing you how you can click on a link in this email and sign up for the free free credit monitoring. Don't do it, because you just can't be sure that that email you're going to get purportedly from Home Depot is from Home Depot. So just ignore it. Go right to the HomeDepot.com website. There you'll be able to find the real link to click on to get that credit monitoring. But remember, credit monitoring is just like hiring someone who, when you cross the street and get hit by a bus, comes out and tells you, hey, you just got hit by a bus. It's not going to prevent identity theft. So you might also want to put a credit freeze on your credit report. You can find out how to do this as well as some other information to protect yourself from identity theft in my new book, Identity Theft Alert, or at my website, scamicide.com.
Thank you, Steve. Very informative indeed. As always, Steve Wiseman keeps us up to date on scams and fraud. His book, Identity Theft Alert, the latest published by Prentice Hall, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, also published by Prentice Hall, and his website, Scamicide, is a place to visit, scamicide.com. Steve Wiseman, one of our people here, around the table, cast of characters that make up this program, A Touch of Gray. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Kevin Casey. Thank you, Beverly Santanella, our producer on the front line. And thank you, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the show. On behalf of all of us, I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.